Welcome to A History of Pandemics. I'm Megan, your host. Thank you so much for tuning in. On this podcast, we delve into some of history's most devastating epidemics and pandemics. This episode is part two in my two-part series on the COVID-19 pandemic. In the last episode, I interviewed two of my friends about their experiences living in a pandemic. Today, you will get to hear the perspective of my strings teacher, who is an educator and a musician. You can find all episodes of the podcast for free on Spotify or wherever else you listen to podcasts. To listen to A History of Pandemics, just click on the app and type in A History of Pandemics into the search bar. And now, back to the episode. Without further ado, please welcome my high school strings teacher, Ms. Ruth Anderson. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. It is a pleasure to have you.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
For sure. Thank you so much. So before we begin, if you could briefly introduce yourself to the audience, that would be wonderful so that they can get to know you a bit better.
Yeah, sure. So my name is Ruth Anderson. I teach strings and symphony. And I've been doing that for 21 years now. I enjoy it. I was a student of strings myself when I was a student, when I was in school, had strings classes and began that way. And when I was in high school, I knew that's what I wanted to do. So that's what I've been doing now, and I enjoy it a lot.
For sure. So yeah, thank you so much for that very lovely introduction. And so as a music student myself, I'm very grateful for music teachers who are so inspired by the world of music and especially classical music and, you know, take it upon themselves to pass on that interest and passion to the youth nowadays. So yeah, we're all very grateful for you. And so yeah, today on this episode, we will be talking about the COVID-19 pandemic and specifically from the perspective of a teacher as well as a musician. So to start, how has the pandemic affected your life in general?
Well, now things are getting better, luckily, and we've been able to meet in class, even if it's half the time and half the group. But initially it was, you know, quite a shock and quite disappointing that we couldn't meet last spring. It really saddened me. I often thought to myself, I didn't become a teacher to, you know, be online and look at people's screens. So that was, and especially music, because we have to play together and kind of get analyzed in the moment and work through some things and then perform live. So, yeah, I mean, that's one thing is that, you know, obviously we have things, good technology now, and we can record things, but we don't have that live audience, that live interaction. So I'd say that's the biggest thing that I'm missing now.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, definitely as a student as well, I definitely relate to all of your experiences and especially the music ones, because I would say arguably that was the biggest transition in terms of school learning nowadays, because it's a lot more simple for other classes like math or like science to be transitioned onto an online platform, but it's very hard to do music lessons. So I have private lessons and they were online for quite a bit, and that was actually rather difficult, and then much less having, you know, a full orchestra with all of us getting together. That's obviously even more difficult because of all of the distancing measures. But I think luckily things are getting much better. So now we have been able to meet, as Ms. Anderson mentioned. And so going off of the topic of school and learning, how has that changed for you since before the pandemic? And I know you hinted at this a bit, but just maybe go in a bit more detail. And then if possible, if you have any notable experiences that you've had during this pandemic in regards to teaching or with music, feel free to share that as well.
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing is the technology, perhaps even athletic directors too didn't anticipate so much technology being part of lesson learning. But I've had to get myself up to speed with Teams, Zoom, recording, editing, those kinds of things. And there's been a few bumps along the way. But I always, and this is for everybody, I'm sure you all know that we never stop learning, right? So we always continue to learn. And I'm grateful for that, that I've been able to learn more things and new things. And, you know, in the background, a lot of us teachers have been working through technology and doing all of that. So this just makes it more present. That being said, as I mentioned, there's nothing that replaces a live audience. So maybe going forward, there'll be some kind of hybrid, you know, ways for people internationally to watch or listen while we're performing live. But there's nothing better than that one take, that one, everybody's nervous, the lights are shining really brightly, our parents are waiting nervously in the audience, and then there's applause at the end. So, and notable experiences, I think just everybody's resilience. You know, we all came back, I think, very worried and nervous about what would happen in the fall, and things were kind of gradually getting worse, but everybody, you know, stuck it out, worked hard on their own, kind of remained positive and helped each other out. And so that's been great. And I think we're going to end the school year on a high note, you know, some outdoor performances and concerts virtually. And so I'm looking forward to that too.
Yeah, for sure. I really like the fact that you brought up the whole resilience aspect. I think I've really seen that as well with the teachers, you know, navigating the whole online platform, trying to figure out how to teach things when we're remote for 1 week and in person the next. I know that's been a really big change for all of us. And so, yeah, I think I've also seen from just a student's perspective as well, how flexible and adapt, and I guess, yeah, how well the students adapt to change so easily. I think that's been really, really great to see. And so, yeah, I guess one thing I can also share, if you don't mind me talking about this a bit more, is that in the fall, we had our symphony class and we were supposed to be recording by the end of the quarter. For reference, we're using a quarter system. So it was around like mid-November, we were supposed to be recording. Everything was set up. We had such a great venue. But then lockdown measures made it, it became so much stricter and we had to cancel everything. So things kind of got put off hold there a little bit. It was rather disappointing, especially for some of the soloists who the orchestra was supposed to accompany. But now I think, you know, we're bouncing back. We're having some weekly rehearsals where you have some really cool music, like, you know, Dvorak New World, that's always an orchestra classic. And yeah, we're really looking forward to an outdoor virtual performance. And so, yeah, that's really not what any of us were really expecting, even knowing that we had to go into, you know, learning during this pandemic with a new perspective. But yeah, it's just been really cool and inspiring to see.
Yeah. I know. I'm looking forward to the outdoor live streaming. That'll be another thing to try, but we'll know that there's an audience out there and it'll be nice to be all together because the symphony is a large group and it is nice to hear everybody back together. Playing New World, which we worked on so hard last year and didn't get to perform. So that's exciting that we are going to get to perform it.
Yeah, for sure. I think the outdoor virtual concert is really cool. I think even going forward, when COVID hopefully is not going to be such a serious thing anymore, I think we can also still experiment with outdoor virtual concerts in the spring of maybe even next year, the year after that, et cetera. Because I think, I don't know, I just don't think outdoor concerts are as common, but I think, you know, having more of these kinds of experiences, it kind of diversifies our experiences as a classical musician, because normally people just think about like those concert halls and stuff, which is also really great, but I guess we can show them that we're versatile, we can do it like in other places as well.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and there are groups, you know, symphonies and such that perform outdoors in the summer, and that is a whole different experience. Like you said, it's different when you don't have four walls around you and the sound kind of goes everywhere, plus birds chirping and cars driving by and other kind of distractions, but you have to stay focused and listen to each other. So yeah, it'll be exciting.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And I think As we're on this topic, maybe we can also talk about some pros and cons of this whole online and technology situation. So I think one thing that was really interesting to me was the variety of opportunities we were still able to get while still learning from people virtually. So I know recently we had some clinics as well. Just some sectionals with some instructors outside of our school. And I thought that was really, really interesting to see other teachers' points of view and how we can use those opinions to become better musicians. So do you want to provide a bit more detail on those clinics and how they were for you as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely a time of creativity. And there was the opportunity for other teachers to work with you guys. And it's not the perfect situation because I think those teachers really wanted to be able to hear you in person, show you a few things. But, you know, we're having to learn to adapt and really learn things in different ways. It's not so much the teacher saying, here, do this and playing really quickly. It's more of explaining. It's a different way of learning. Things have to be explained. They have to be spoken out and worded. And that's something that's a challenge for teachers because musicians can often just play something and then the students pick up on it quickly. So that's been a new thing. And certainly there can be other things in the future. I can just see, you know, maybe orchestras across the world, you know, kind of reaching out and talking to each other, maybe Zoom calls or something. So that's promising. And then another thing that happened this year is VSB had celebration concerts each quarter. So the nice thing about that is that different schools in Vancouver could perform for each other, which normally they would have their own kind of, you know, fall concert, spring concert, that type of thing. So that was really neat. I really appreciated being able to see other groups and showcase our groups as well. And luckily, our fine arts coordinator is very technology savvy. And so she was able to pull that together. So I've appreciated that because it's really celebrated things. One of the things, the first quarter celebration of music that we had, first lockdown measures were starting to happen in November, and it was really kind of sad and disappointing after things were opening back up. And so it was like a glimmer of light that students could perform, that they could keep going, that things were open and music was still happening. So yeah, I think a lot of teachers and parents and families around are seeing that, yeah, we can still keep things going, live music and performing for each other.
Mm-hmm, for sure. So yeah, I've watched all of the Celebration of Music videos so far on YouTube Unlisted. And yeah, I think it is a really great opportunity just to see what other schools around our district are doing. Also, maybe just in a way you can virtually get in touch with them per se. So yeah, it's been really inspiring to see how other groups are also adapting to the same challenges that we all have. And yeah, I remember in the past, there have been some attempts from, you know, the district to try and get different string groups together. I remember we did one, I think two years ago now, or maybe 1.5 years ago before the pandemic. And that was also really cool. But I think going forward, once again, we can see that even though, you know, we have to make a lot of different changes regarding to how we're doing things during this time, there are quite a few things that we can take from this and keep moving forward with. And I think this whole, you know, inter-school cooperation with the different music groups is definitely something that we can look forward into.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. So now I guess we've probably talked quite a bit about challenges and stuff, but I guess from a teacher's perspective, what is the biggest challenge that teachers currently face? And just from the way that you've been, you know, observing your students during the last few months of teaching during this pandemic, what are some challenges that students also face as well, and particularly music students?
Yes. Well, this quarter system, as you've alluded to, if anybody doesn't know, a 10-week kind of intensive course has led to certain things, and our classes have been split in half. So I think for music and musicians, that's been the biggest challenge. Not having everyone together, saying, oh, you know, the morning group practiced at this speed, so now the afternoon group needs to do the same. Or in the morning group, we worked on this articulation, and so we need to work on that now. Kind of like a messenger. I've been kind of like a messenger there. And then we've pulled it together, and that just shows the talent, of course, that we have, that students have just been able to pick up on that. And then when we get together, they automatically put in those requests and changes. So it's been amazing. But yeah, split in half. Another thing with the quarter system, which was more my case in quarter one and two, was just lack of time to get things done, first of all, but then also just to make photocopies or answer emails. So that was, it was so intense that there just wasn't much time. So we always need more time. And that was another challenge on top of a challenge. But other than that, you know, there have been some silver linings. It's been nice that students have been smaller, student groups have been smaller, so they can get to know each other better. And also, like, just each day, seeing everybody each day, you know, you kind of get to know the personalities and strengths and weaknesses of certain players, and it's been helpful. So yeah, there's been some pluses and minuses, we're making it through.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, I think definitely the whole time issue, I think that's something that all of us are facing, especially, yeah, I guess with the, you know, yeah, quarter system, even though you're taking two courses at a time, it's really not as much time as you think. And especially for classes like music or visual arts or any other fine arts subject, I think theoretically you do almost get the same amount of instruction as you would in a regular school year, because you do get like almost 2 hours per day, and that's just been condensed into 10 weeks. But what really happens is, first of all, half of the weeks are remote, so you're really not getting as much time as you think. And then second of all, a lot of these classes that are, you know, fine arts related, it really takes a lot of time for, you know, I guess the concepts, the musicality, all of the cohesiveness of the orchestra, just things like that. It takes a lot more time to settle in. So even though you might get, you know, 2 hours per day, you still need like that months of preparation and rehearsals in order to really solidify into like a cohesive unit of musicians working together. And I think, yeah, that's something that we've all seen that's been quite challenging. But, you know, I think given all the difficulties and obstacles we've had with the whole timing situation, I do think we are doing a very impressive job, especially, you know, having to take some breaks in between the quarters and then starting back up again. But, you know, I still think we're doing really well.
Yes. Yes. And I totally forgot about the remote. Yeah, that is a huge challenge. Because when students are not meeting together, I mean, you know, you hope that they're practicing, but it's not the same. You know, they're playing that second violin part and it doesn't sound anything like the original music. So people don't really study that part per se. And like you said, getting cohesive in musicians, it takes time. I like to think of it like sound waves. You know, there's just all these different waves, and everybody's kind of bouncing at all different lengths, some very long and wide and some short and narrow. And then over time, it just gets more and more synchronized, more and more together. And then there is this, yeah, like cohesive one unit, which sounds really good. But that's just only something that happens with a minimal number of rehearsals. Obviously, professionals can do it in, you know, maybe two or three or five rehearsals, but young musicians are learning to get there and to know their parts as well as other parts. So that takes time. But we're getting there. And, you know, the lucky thing is we do have these linear courses. So that's helped, I think, everybody to kind of get to know each other, because the beginning is a little bit slow and kind of getting back into the groove and the routine. And then there's the middle of the year where we have different things going on. And now we're getting to the end of the year. So big highlights and challenges, and things like that.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's also really interesting you brought up the topic of like the two different groups. And just so for the audience's context, in our school, each class is split up into two cohorts. And so half of the students go in the morning and then half of the students go in the afternoon. So for a symphony class like ours, that means half of the students are in the morning and half the students are in the afternoon. And that also creates some issues. For example, especially in the wind section, you have a lot less people. So for example, maybe like the clarinets can only come in the morning, then you don't hear that part in the afternoon. And that kind of throws people off as well, because in symphony music, a lot of the cues, musical cues, they come from the other instruments. And it's kind of like a conversation where you have to hear it and then you respond with your own sections playing. And that's, you know, been a little bit interesting to see. And also, I've never really asked this before, but when you were working with the two different groups, like cohort A and B, did you notice any, like, I guess, significant differences in the way the music was interpreted? Since, you know, it's a different group of musicians, it might sound a totally different way.
Yes, in what you mentioned too, you know, maybe a first clarinet part is missing, or a second oboe, or something like that. But also, certain musicians like to take different tempi. And so, you know, one group might want to do this tempo and another group do a different tempo. And so that was a challenge. And always with each group, there's different challenges. So, you know, one group might have the cello part might be really succinct and fine, but then in the other group, that cello part is not lining up with the violas or something. And so it's always different. There's always different things to fix in each cohort. And so just that consistency is a challenge, because, you know, they really need to hear each other and lean on each other that way. So, yeah, it was a challenge, especially in such a big group as symphony, because the cohorts were not exactly lined up. One was, and I can't remember which one, was slightly larger. One was close to 30 members and one was, you know, low 20s. So that's a really big difference in, you know, how many wind players are there, or how many cellists are there, or something like that. So yeah, it has its own challenges.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I think, yeah, it's like, if I had to use this analogy, it's like two different paint colors, but you need them to blend together, but then it still needs time for it to blend. So yeah, I guess that would be like a representation of what that was like for us in symphony. And yeah, I think that was a really great discussion about that. So yeah, I guess we can move on to this next question. So given that we're all in a pandemic, you know, teachers have to find a variety of different ways to make sure that people are being safe and learning in a safe, sanitized environment. And so in most classes, the teachers will have like a bottle of hand sanitizer. You have to spray your hands. They wipe down the tables with bleach and stuff like that. But for any members of the audience who are not musicians, Ms. Anderson, do you want to explain what steps you have taken to make sure your students' learning environment is as safe as possible, given that, you know, we are in larger groups and we're also musicians, so that's a lot more space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, one thing, I mean, obviously we have hand sanitizer. I use the Lysol wipes at least once a day, wipe things down. And we're spaced out, windows open, that type of thing. But one thing that we have an advantage of as strings players is we can keep our masks on the entire time. So that's been a great thing, because now there has been some wind players, and I have some plexiglass dividers to make sure that they're not, you know, breathing close to each other and those types of things. But it's all being vigilant. And one thing that I'm grateful for it being is everybody's remembered their masks. And if not, they can go to the office. And, you know, everybody's kept them on the whole time. So another thing that maybe the audience doesn't know is that you guys haven't had like eating breaks here or food. So, you know, by not having lunch, by not having to remove the masks, that certainly makes people more safe. So yeah, I think it's been a bit of a challenge. Sometimes high school kids like to have lots of snacks and eat and things like that, but a small sacrifice to make just to keep, make sure we're keeping safe and distant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So yeah, thank you for that explanation. I think, yeah, I'm also really happy that all the students in, you know, our strengths classes, they're all making sure that they're taking steps to, you know, prevent like any sort of possible transmission. So, you know, I think people are trying to move their stands and chairs away, like, yeah, as you know, far away as possible. And the wind players, they also have the plexiglass dividers so that they can take off their masks when playing their instruments, but still, you know, be as safe as possible. And what's interesting, I have a funny example from my outside orchestra, is that for the wind and brass players, they actually have like these big shower curtains just to, you know, because, yeah, I guess to make sure that like nothing really escapes per se. And then for the brass players that have their bells, sometimes moisture can come out of the instrument. And that's obviously, you know, not the most sanitary thing in the world at the moment. So my orchestra will give them these little pads that the dogs use to like take, like, you know, to like pee on. So they use that to absorb the moisture. And then after rehearsal, they throw it out. So, you know, yeah, it's been really funny. And I think musicians are also really creative, as well as most artists are. So yeah, I thought that was really funny.
That's hilarious. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, all in all, to all of the string students, thank you so much for, you know, making sure that everyone's staying as safe as possible. And yeah, we really appreciate all of that, all of the help that you guys have given. And yeah, that's been really great. So yeah, I guess talking a little bit more about the performing arts, as you know, I guess we have been for, you know, most of the discussion already, but I think since the pandemic began, you know, there's been a significant impact on different like or arts organizations. And so, for example, all of the symphony orchestras, they are like basically shut down. All of the opera and ballet companies, they're also being shut down. So what are your thoughts and experiences on that? And this, yeah, it can be about organizations that are outside of school as well. But yeah, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, VSO has had to do, they do virtual concerts, but I know after having talked to a few members that they're maybe down to half or a third of what they've used to do. So they've been performing, they usually perform every week or multiple concerts a week. And so it's much less. And that's sad because I think we all wonder, how is this all going to end? How are we, you know, are we going to return to multiple concerts, big orchestra halls filled with members and audiences? So that's always a concern. But they've been resilient and they've been streaming concerts and doing things that way to continue paying their artists. And yeah, I mean, we've had to do these you know, outdoor concerts or virtual concerts. And, you know, it's just our way, you know, anybody I talk to, especially people who are not in the arts, they have always said, like, I think we'll really appreciate more what we have once it returns. And I think that's true. You know, we won't take it so much for granted, at least initially, that, you know, students will be able to gather and patrons will come and hear us. And so I think we're all looking forward to that again, when we can open doors and have people gather together, because there's few times in the community, you know, I think the sports teachers would agree that, you know, pretty much sports and music or performing arts, that's the way for the community to gather. That's when administration comes, teachers come and parents come, and they celebrate what the kids have learned. And particularly in this school, which is arts driven, So I think we're really going to look forward to the days that we can get back together and celebrate our accomplishments.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, I think adding on to that, I think you and I and all of, like, you know, our students and staff at our school, we've all been a really privileged position, you know, to keep our jobs as students and as teachers, as school staff. But I guess because the arts, it's quite different, I would say, from most of these other, like, I guess, to be generic, the classic, like, 9-to-5 job. It's pretty stable. But for the performing arts, especially if you're like a freelance artist or musician, things aren't as stable. And so when things like a pandemic happens, you're not really in demand anymore, because that's not the priority. And so unfortunately, we've seen like a lot of people lose their jobs. And that's been really, really sad. And yeah, so that's just been really, really unfortunate. And so I guess what I've been trying to do, I've been trying to listen to, you know, either like YouTube recordings, or, you know, I even see like some places like the the Royal Ballet Company in London. They have like, they actually live stream some of their concerts now, and they also have like a little fundraiser tab, so you can tip them online via YouTube live chat, which is also, you know, it's very interesting, but it's also a really great way to support them. And I think some other ways you can do that are just, yeah, going to the virtual concerts as well, because most of them are live, so, you know, you're really getting great quality. It's just maybe not the same experience, but, you know, I guess we should just all do our part to support that. And I guess adding off of that, what I do think has made it, I guess the good thing that came out of this, though, is that classical music, especially, I think, and basically every other type of performing arts, it's been a lot more accessible now since the pandemic, because everything is online. So yeah, you don't have to pay like that much money to attend a concert. And I guess, to be fair, classical concerts aren't that expensive anyways, but yeah, it's just been a lot more accessible to everybody. And if you're someone that maybe hasn't had a chance to experience classical music, this might actually be a really great time to do so, because everything's online. There really is no excuse for you not to go onto YouTube and find some recordings, because yeah, they're really, really great.
Yeah, that's a great point. Accessible. Yeah, I think that's been, you know, one of the benefits of all this virtual stuff is accessibility, and limits to barriers in the way. Like you said, it wasn't expensive, but maybe people just didn't really know, didn't hear about it as much, didn't take the effort to go downtown and see, you know, a concert, but now it's just a click away. So that's been amazing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And I think that the thing that comes with accessibility is also, it's just a lot more informal. And so just, I mean, we're both speaking from a classical musician perspective, since we both do classical music. But yeah, I think what I've seen from other people who don't listen to classical music as much is that they may be a little bit intimidated by like the culture that classical musicians have at these concerts, where, you know, you don't clap in between the movements, or you do have to dress up to some degree. And so people may be intimidated by that, and that's why they don't find it as, you know, accessible as maybe a pop concert, where you can really just do whatever. But now it's, everything's online, so you can really be just watching a classical concert in your pajamas as well, when you're eating, anything like that. And actually, one notable thing that's been really interesting that's actually happening right now is the Menuhin violin competition. So that's like the Olympics of violin for young violinists from, I think, like age like 8 or something to like 22. And so I've been watching the live streams, and yeah, everything's being online now. So yeah, anyone on YouTube can go check it out. The contestants, they're absolutely incredible. They're all like, they're basically world-class, even though they're like just as young as I am. And what's also interesting is I actually know one of the competitors personally. And so, yeah, I watched her performance. That was really, really great. So yeah, check out the Menuhin competition. It's really cool.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. To see that talent. And there it is right on YouTube. Oh, that's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think this really shows that even international competitions, international music competitions, like like they've all found ways to be online as well. And so, you know, it really shows the resilience that the performing arts community actually has. And so, yeah, while it's a lot different and maybe not what people have expected in the past, it's definitely something that's still really interesting. And, you know, we should definitely support that in any way that we can. So I think in the description, I'll try to find some things I can link so that people can check it out, maybe make things a bit more accessible. So yeah, you can just click it on the description.
Yeah, neat.
Mm-hmm, for sure. So yeah, I guess I think this probably is our this is our final question for today, but just in general, this doesn't have to be music related at all, but what are some silver linings to the pandemic that you've experienced so far?
Silver linings. Well, I think, I mean, just bringing it back to music and strings, I think, you know, resilience is one of the main ones, getting together when we can. I think you mentioned accessibility. That's a great one. And just not taking for granted, you know, our health and being able to be together. We have been fortunate where we are in BC that students have been required to attend. So, and we haven't had that many outbreaks at our school. So I think it's been a great thing that we all have our health and that we're still playing and making amazing music together.
Mm-hmm, for sure. So yeah, I definitely agree with everything you just said. And for me, I would say, yeah, it really does build that sense of character. And so I think from this, I think most students have grown to be a lot more, you know, independent, understanding about global affairs and just understanding public health policy as well, since everyone's keeping, you know, updates on the, you know, the pandemic, the COVID-19 vaccine rollout and stuff. So that's been really, really optimistic. I think, yeah, Canada, we're doing better. I think, you know, a vaccine should be coming out for most of the middle-aged populations. So, you know, go get your vaccines. And then I think in terms of, you know, social life, while, you know, we don't get to hang out with people in person as much, I think everyone's found new ways to communicate, whether it's through like a Zoom call like we are right now, or, you know, other social media platforms. I think, well, yeah, once again, the resiliency. And then, yeah, also, I'm just really grateful to our school, our staff, everybody that's been, you know, working together to, you know, make sure that everyone's being as safe as possible. And then also to, yeah, just our fine arts coordinators, our principal, for just always being so supportive of our music program, as that's arguably one of the most important and well-known aspects of our school. So yeah, that's been really, really nice.
It has been nice. They are so supportive. And it seems like everything we say, oh, can we record for this virtual concert? Sure. Can we perform outside? Sure. You know, so they've been so supportive. Yeah, it's been wonderful.
Mm-hmm, for sure. So yeah, as someone who's so interested in music, performing arts, and I think for many students, that's also, you know, this, they're also in the same situation. So yeah, it's been really exciting. And so hopefully after things do get better, hopefully by the next school year, I think we can see even more exciting things to come from, you know, the entire fine arts community, as well as our strings classes as well. So that's really, really exciting.
Yeah.
For sure. So yeah, I guess that brings us to the end of this interview. So I just want to thank you again, Ms. Anderson, for your time. It was really, really fun interviewing you. And yeah, I really hope you enjoyed this experience as well.
I have. You are a great interviewer and you've got some great questions. This is a fabulous platform. So I'm happy to be a small part of it. Thank you.
No, thank you so much. So yeah, once again, thank you to the audience for watching, and please check out our description for some ways that you can also help support the fine arts community at this time. So yeah, thank you again. Thank you for listening to A History of Pandemics. Next episode, we will discuss a disease outbreak as traditional on the show, but the exact epidemic will be a surprise. All episodes of History of Pandemics are available for free on Spotify or wherever else you listen to podcasts. You can stream the podcast on your computer, phone, tablet, or any other electronic device wherever you are. If you enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to follow the podcast on Spotify and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. See you next time.